Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Secret studio, deep within the Sawtooth and Rocky Mountain ranges in southwestern Idaho, comes Thursday evening's favorite show, Writer's Block, and my very favorite co-host, darling of the airwaves, Miss Bobby Jean Bell.
I'm here. I'm looking forward to another night with you, Mr. Christina, in the host chair.
I'm so glad to be back in my chair. And we have such a great show lined up. But first, I want to say one thing. As most of you now know, I've spent about 3 months out of the last four in the hospital. And I got such a wonderful, wonderful greeting card from Claire Fullerton, who's been on our show many times. And she's just a huge fan of the Writer's Block and just doesn't ever want us to go away. And we have no plans in going away. But her comments to me, and I am remiss. I did not bring the card in with me. I was going to read it on the air, but I will next week. But it was such a nice sentiment. And needless to say, she just is glad that I'm back and glad that the Writer's Block is going forward. And she just never wants us to leave. And she loves us and would miss us terribly if we left. And so, Bobby Jean, that's to you as well.
Hugs to Claire.
I'm telling you, total hugs and kisses to Claire. And we love her back.
We do.
She is like one of our favorite people. And, of course, tonight's show is with one of our favorite writers. But first, there is the indubitable, indomitable Mr. Henry Park. Good evening, Henry.
Why, thank you, Jim.
Why, you're welcome, Henry.
Well, greetings, Jim. Greetings, Bobby Jean. Now, August was the first time in a half a year that I missed posting a roundup. But in my defense, my old pal and writing partner, Jay Kamen, came into town, and together we did a page one rewrite on a screenplay and wrote a treatment for another. So I was working, and I'll definitely be posting within the next week or two. Now, I've been doing a ton.
So you've been creative during this quiet time, sort of quiet time in the world.
I am the luckiest writer I know. I have been working constantly since this whole thing began. And as usual, I'm behind constantly. But I've been doing a ton of interviews with some really terrific filmmakers and great character actors for the Roundup and True West. You know, one fascinating guy is Travis Mills, who I first met when he was associate producer in Alex Cox's film, Tombstone Rashomon, which, by the way, is available now on Prime Video. When Travis told me his plan, he says, I'm going to make 12 Westerns in 12 months. And I thought, yeah, good luck with that. But we talked in July, seventh month of the year, amid coronavirus and everything. He had 7 films in the can. He's clicking along on the others. I've seen clips from several. And they really look good. And they all look very different. They don't look like a series at all. They're, you know, all standalone films. And one of his stars is Mitchell Ryan. And I just interviewed Mitch about doing Dark Shadows, about starring opposite Lee Marvin and Jack Palance and Monty Walsh, working with Clint Eastwood and High Plains Drifter and Magnum Force and so many others.
Mm.
Now, it's an interesting thing how film subjects move in waves. Back in the late 60s and early 70s, most Westerns were about the end of the Western era.
Right.
Today, I guess in part because of the success of Justified and Ozarks, we have a string of contemporary Westerns with backwoods or hillbilly backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
INSP's newest movie, right now available exclusively on the Vudu platform, is Blue Ridge. It's a Western murder mystery set against a long-running Hatfields and McCoys kind of a feud. The lawman is Jonathan Scheck, who I just knew from the great Tom Hanks film, That Thing You Do.
Oh, yeah, the lead singer.
Right, he's the guy who's such a jerk to Liv Tyler, but he's really good in the picture.
Right.
But Western-wise, I didn't know, but he played Jonah Hex on DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
And the great Graham Greene is terrific as the patriarch of one of the rural clans. Now, in the same vein, oh, he's terrific.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. And in the same vein, in November, we get Diane Lane and Kevin Costner and Let Him Go. He's a retired sheriff. Their married son dies, and they're trying to maintain the relationship with their grandson when their daughter-in-law marries into an infamous backwoods criminal family. And though it's certainly not a Western, but also in November and with similar interest, we'll have from director Ron Howard, Hillbilly Elegy, based on the best-selling memoir by J.D. Vance. It stars Amy Adams and Glenn Close, and another of its stars is the great Bo Hopkins.
And
he was just, he was telling me he just came out of retirement to do that movie.
Oh, well.
Now, of course, Bo and Ron Howard co-starred in American Graffiti, but do you know the first time they worked together?
I have no clue.
It's practically Bo's first credit in the 1967 episode of The Andy Griffith Show.
Oh, my.
If you want to find it, it's Goober the Executive, but I wouldn't search if it was me.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Henry.
Well, now, one sad note, author Max Evans, who, of course, I'm sure you're all so familiar with, who wrote two great novels which became fine Western films, The Rounders and The High-Low Country, died this past week at the age of 95.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I had the privilege of interviewing him a couple of times, and you can read the highlights of those great conversations and so much more in the next roundup at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Hey, before you go, Henry.
Yes, sir.
What's your take on this season's Yellowstone?
You know, I'm a few episodes in, and I've got to say I'm enjoying it more than the first two. I sort of feel it's an obligation when there's so few Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been that big a fan. I love the outdoor stuff. I love Costner in it. A lot of the inner family stuff I find just too over the top. What do you think of it?
Well, I think they've almost grabbed their feet finally, and they're standing up on two legs. It was real shaky the first couple of seasons because I don't think they really knew where they were going with it.
Mm-hmm.
But now that now they got dead people they got to deal with. I think the next season, which I think is going to be the last, if I'm not mistaken, the fourth season,
right.
That we'll get all of that cleaned up, and of course we will be able to read that then in Henry's Western Roundup.
That's right. At www, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you so much, my friend.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, and have a great show.
Absolutely. Okay, then. Tonight we have, back by popular demand and by invite, we have a writer from the wilds of Tennessee, Sparta, Tennessee. Actually, when I was speaking with Claire Fullerton today, she thought it was in North Carolina. Sorry, Claire, you lose. It is in Tennessee. And he was actually born there, I believe, and raised there. And he's a college professor. I'm sorry?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I hadn't said anything, but
Well, then we have an alien on the, alien on the air with us. Well, then I'll get right to you. Okay. We have with us a returning author whose anthology is out, or just out, Bittersweet Amalgamation. It's a composite. I don't know if you would call it a anthology, but it is a composite of short stories. And please welcome to the Writer's Block, back to the Writer's Block for your second visit, Mr. Troy D. Smith. Yay.
I was so proud of turn. I thought you were asking me a question earlier.
Oh, no. Well, hello, Troy.
Well, hi there.
And good to have you back with us.
It is good to be back.
Well, good. I'm glad it's nice to be somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah, better than the alternative.
I hear you. Last time you were on the show, we discussed at length writing anthologies and writing the Western anthologies and writing Westerns, period. Tonight, I think we'd like to get into more writing short stories and putting them together in a volume. Bobby Jean had some questions about who did the pick where the stories went. So I've always wondered that too, but then, you know, doing the anthologies for Planetary, I know how they got in there, but, you know, it's like the editors pick it. Your stories are, they run the gamut from modern to horror to Western to, good God, just about anything else in between. And you're such a prolific writer of almost every genre I can think of. And so I guess my comment to you, Mr. Smith, were I be forced to make one, and I am, of course, more forced to make one because I am the host of the show, pick one. Pick a genre. No. You're so good and so smooth at all of them. The transitions are phenomenal, and I'd like to discuss that a little bit. But first of all, I'm gonna let Bobby Jean ask her question about who picked for story show.
Hi, Troy.
Hi.
Hi. We are talking about, as Jim said, a bittersweet amalgamation. And my first question is for our listeners: maybe just how you gather them together by genre in this book. What are the genres that you cover in this book?
Well, Western, of course, and mystery / crime, science fiction and fantasy and horror. Mm. And I don't know, I had some stories that don't really fit into a genre, like the noir boxing story. So I just kind of had a catch-all genre. And I threw a few poems. I used to write more poetry, but I haven't written too much, but I put a few of those in there. Just, I don't know, I kind of looked at this as like a sampler platter of my work.
And when you were working on the flow of the stories, did you work with an editor to determine which of the stories should be included and then what the flow would be? Or did you come up with that on your own?
Well, in the past, I have been the editor on other books for other people, like the Western Fiction Years. I edited some stuff, and generally it is the editor. But in this case, I decided to release this through my own imprint, or what's left of it. I generally just use it for my own stuff now, although in the past I've published other people. So I got to wear all the hats. So it was all me.
Mm-hmm. You're one of the things I was mentioning to Jim when we were talking earlier is on many of your stories, that first line, title and first line are really captivating.
Right.
And I think that's probably true in most novels, but I think with the short story, it's really important. I wrote down a few of the ones that really caught my attention, but when you're writing a short story, Do you go back to a first, do you have the first line right out of the box, or do you go back and massage those first few sentences later? Does that make sense?
You know, what I often do is I've got that first line and the last line firmly in mind. And then I try to figure out how to get from one to the other. But you're absolutely right. When you're writing short fiction, you don't have a lot of time, you know, for exposition and stuff. You have to grab the reader.
Yeah.
And so I try to do that right away. And then I try to have something memorable at the end that will stick with
me. And you do that so well. Like, one of the very first stories, it comes from Dead Rednecks Are My Specialty. And the opening line is, "They say you killed somebody, Ivory." It's like, okay, so we already kind of know where we're going. And here's from a horror, and it was helpful to know that this was, I was in the horror genre, and the story was The Wendigo. You know, "Where do you reckon them boys is at?" Joe Petrie asked Billy. "They've been gone an awful long time. You reckon they got lost?" Well, we're in a horror story, so we can imagine. And of course, my favorite is from Bitter Mountain, which we talked about a little earlier. "Killing Curtis Baker was much easier than he thought it would be." You grab us right away.
Yep.
Well, thank you. Actually, my favorite, one of my favorite openings ever that I've done is on the story Hollow Road.
I've got that one listed here too.
I don't remember word for word.
Tom Jarvis felt certain that no man had ever loved a woman as deeply, as truly, and as fully as he loved his wife. And then there's a couple other sentences. Marcia had been dead for over 6 months before Tom finally, reluctantly, admitted to himself he was going to have to kill her.
God, I love that. Hey, guys, I'm going to have to call it right now. We're going to do a brief, real quick commercial for LA Talk Radio, and we'll be back at you. You're listening to The Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Christina, your host for The Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio. And this is just a reminder that while everybody's locked down with this COVID-19, working from home, getting bored, you do have an option, and that option is to go to www.latalkradio.com. See, as a .com, we've got it all, from music, sports, self-help. Hell, we even have talk. So why don't you tune in during the day while you're working and listen to what our great hosts and great shows have to say. And just a reminder, Thursday night, 7 p.m. Pacific, is The Writer's Block, brought to you by LA Talk Radio. So have yourselves a great time, stay safe out there, and remember, latalkradio.com.
And a brief rejoinder to that particular ad is that we are now on at 6 p.m. Pacific, so I will be re-recording that that ad. And so that's what Russ told me about last week or 2 weeks ago, when I didn't listen. Shame on me. Anyhow, it is 7:17. We're on the air with Troy D. Smith. And unfortunately, you cannot call in while we were doing the auto studio and the remote broadcasting. But feel free to sit back, listen, pop another beer. Do whatever it is that you do to enjoy yourself and listen to the radio, because we're here to entertain you. You're not here to entertain us. Okay. All right. Bobby Jean, continue, please.
Oh, so let's see. Troy, how challenging do you find it to write across the different genres? Is it challenging or not?
I don't know. I almost feel like for me, it would be more challenging not to.
Uh-huh.
Because I have just a wide variety of interests. And I don't like being, you know, confined. I love each of those genres. I've had more success in some than others. But sometimes, you know, I'll get a little burned out from one approach and, you know, kind of refresh the palate by doing something different.
Uh-huh. Well, and I think as a reader, I definitely enjoyed that about this collection, that I went to different worlds. I was in different time frames. I was in outer space. I was in a cave with a lot of treasure. You really sort of dazzled me with, okay, where are we going? And I felt that a lot of the stories definitely have that sort of what if premise. Like, I could almost imagine you at your computer or with your tablet or whatever going, what if XYZ happened?
Shaking your beard going, huh, how can I screw with them now? And I have to say, Troy, that Bobby and I discussed this this afternoon. For even if you don't know this, Bobby and I talk every Thursday before the show. And it's usually about an hour conversation. And we go through this evening's guest and about the book and yada, yada. But what we discovered was at the last, I said, when we talked, 4 or 5 pages, but I probably should have said 15 or 20 pages. To the end of the story, you think, okay, I got it now. I know where this is going.
No.
Thank you for playing.
Yeah.
You're not even close. You're not even close because Troy Smith does what Troy Smith always does. He throws a wrench in there and makes it turn totally 180 degrees. And we had when we thought we knew what the story was going. So congratulations. You've totally, thoroughly confused. Yeah, it does work. It works very well. And you're very good at it. And I might add also that your transition from the different genres to the different genres is so seamless. And so well done that you could go from driving in modern L.A. to being on horseback in the Superstition Mountains in the 1880s. And no one would ever know that you're a genre writer of both genres.
Mm-hmm.
So you're very good. You're just very good at it. So that's my kudos for you this evening.
You know, I interviewed Stan Lee.
That's your 20 bucks, incidentally. Okay.
Beg your pardon?
I said, that's your 20 bucks worth. That's all you get. Okay. I expect PayPal in the morning.
I did a sprint with Ex-Fon Lee several years ago, and he was, I interviewed him about his Western comics, which no one ever talks about, right?
Uh-huh.
And he essentially said that, you know, all stories essentially are about humanity.
Right.
But so to switch from genre to genre isn't as hard as people think, as long as you're writing about humanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
You're able to get, even in a short story, you're really able to, I mean, we're action-driven, we're character-driven. We see character development in many cases with sort of the main character from where that main character is when they start, kind of how the story ends. You get a lot in a small amount of space. How is that, I don't want to say, is that challenging for you? Obviously, it's not challenging for you, but is there a different way you have to go about it than if you were sitting down to write a novel?
More challenging to me because I've spent so much energy trying to work on the craft of short stories, but I do write novels, and the big difference is you have a lot more downtime in novels. You have a lot of that scene and sequel, you know,
right,
where you have the event and then you have the downtime, and you're able to use that to do things that are going to further develop the character, and you're able to use that to do things that are going to enable you, like if you're writing a mystery, to have more believable red herrings or whatever, as opposed to with a short story, you have to really condense it down. And get to the essence. It's the essence of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, get to the essence of it. Yeah. Do you find that readers, you know, I used to think that short stories, especially today, would really develop a big reader following because we all supposedly need to do things like in a minute.
Right.
And yeah. Our attention spans, you know, aren't what they used to be and so forth. And we've had some short story writers tell us that's not really the case. And we've had others that say, yeah, we're sort of finding that. Do you have any sense of that as you look at your book sales or anything about reader concentration time?
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that because reader concentration time, I don't think is what it used to be. But in my experience, it seems like more people either like the longer form better or they think they like the longer form better and have kind of predisposed themselves to do so. I mean, there's a couple of, more than one instance of some of my short stories that are up on, as Kindle stories, for example, that have gotten 1-star reviews from readers because they were too short. They were short.
Ah,
stories.
Oh.
My response to that is, I told you that's what it was.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, at one point I was worried about the future of short stories before digital books came out, because those magazine markets where I started were really drying up. So it's good that it has gotten shot in the arm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I always found short stories to be a little more challenging to write than a novel. Only reason is that I you have to put in so much in such a short period of time. And, you know, I'm not that I tend to draw out the storyline, but it gives me a little, novels give me a little more room to put my story in there and develop dialogue and develop characters. Short stories, man, you got to do it boom, boom, boom. Thank you, Mrs. McGee. Plus, you got to put your twists and turns in there if you're Troy Smith. So you get, I just found it more difficult. And I'm right in the middle of writing some now. And it is more difficult to write short stories than it is a novel. But we plug onward.
I can never remember who it was that originated this quote, but I like the quote. It was somebody in the early 1800s. I know that. But they said, I wanted to write you a shorter letter, but I didn't have time.
Oh,
there you go. Yeah, what that actually makes perfect sense.
It does. It does.
It does, truly.
Troy,
if you've ever had, for example, I've written. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, I've written, wearing my historian hat, I've written encyclopedia entries. And, you know, you're limited to 500 words or 1,000 words about some really big topic. And that is harder than if you had 100
pages
to work.
Mm-hmm. I'll bet.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, do you work on, I know some of the stories in this gathering were perhaps published in other collections, or did you write some specifically for this collection?
There was one I specifically wrote, and that was Fast Company. I had been wanting to write that. I've been planning to write that for a long time. And then a couple of others with the world I wrote that published anywhere else. And then the boxing story just appeared one time in this really great anthology that was put together to raise money for riders with health issues. And it was all boxing stories, which is not my thing. But I've never really had the opportunity to figure out a place to put that elsewhere before. So I wanted a chance to spotlight some of those things. And yes, that one specifically was new, brand new.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jim, do you have a question? Or
I do.
Okay, good.
I always have questions.
Take it.
This particular book, when is the release date, or is it released already? Because I could not find it online.
It is out on Kindle, and due to a snafu, it'll be a couple of days before it's available on the back.
That's why I couldn't find a cover or anything, any info about it.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, this is fresh, man.
Apparently.
I found a cover somewhere that I used when I did my blog this week, but I couldn't tell you where it was. You're right, Jim. It took me a while of walking around trying to find it.
Hey, and these days with me, I don't have time to sit here and search.
Remind me what story the title for the anthology came from, A Bittersweet Amalgamation. I didn't make a note. I know it jumped out of the page at me, but I don't remember. What story did that come from?
That was from the story, The Sin of Eli. And I do have that quote pulled up. The pride and the joy and the sadness and the loss mixed so completely together, they all became the same thing. A sweet occasion Darnell could only call love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-oh. Yeah, and it is the perfect title for this collection.
It truly is. It truly is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to take one more quick break. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. I'm your host, Jim Christina. Let's have a word from Out West.
Oh, okay. Here we go. Readers Wanted. Want tonight's featured titles by Troy D. Smith or any books by Writer's Block featured authors? Easy peasy. One-stop shopping that supports independent sellers and Out West Shop when you purchase books through our bookshop.org affiliate website. Here's the long one, www.bookshop.org/shop/Out West Shop. Click the Writer's Block book list for titles for all our other categories, too. New titles are added daily, written about in our Out West Shop blog, and also find them on the Out West Shop Facebook page. Remember, it's always a great day out west.
And thank you, Bobby. And I love those live commercials. It is now 7:30 on the dot. Or 6:30 in California, and we are LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. You are on the air with Bobby Jean Bell, Jim Christina, your host, and, of course, Mr. Troy D. Smith from the great late state of Sparta, Tennessee, where he hails as a professor of history and all things good. I know you and I talked about history before in Western genre, especially, and you are somewhat of a Western history major, as was I. The way that you write Westerns is quite similar to the way I write Westerns, actually, starkly real. They're just poking out at you, and I have no apologies for my stories of the West, and as I'm sure that you don't as well.
Absolutely. That's the kind I like to read.
Well, me too. I would rather read the basic truth about it than I was a big Louis L'Amour fan, as were you. I mean, you read all the Louis L'Amour stuff when you were shining floors in Kmart. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I read him later on in life. I was never, as a young man, a fan of Louis L'Amour until I got into Westerns. And then I started reading all Louis' stuff, and I found his stories to be good, but I also found them to be starkly reticent in reality. All these heroes were 6 feet tall, square-jawed, square-shouldered, narrow hips.
Interchangeable.
You galloped them horses until the rider fell off, not the horse dropped dead. You know, and it's just like they never went to the bathroom. They always said, ma'am, so it was like, huh? Now, I know that them folks weren't like that because them folks were pretty coarse back then. Even the dandies were pretty coarse if they had to be. So, but I do enjoy reading books that are of a more true nature.
Well, I'm glad that you want mine in.
I absolutely do. Now I go ahead.
No, I was going to say that a couple of the highest points of my writing career have been when I have been given kudos for my writing style by Richard S. Wheeler and Jory Sherman.
Wow.
Jory was a good friend of mine. But I admire the heck out of those guys and their style. And that's really what I like. I like to try to get at the essence of the characters, right? And kind of the internal struggles. And that just appeals more to me than kind of just a run of the mill external things that get imposed in, you know, a lot of formula stories.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Now, I have a comment, and I bring it to you because you are, of course, a writer of the same genre that I am. My latest book, which is called Jefferson's Chance, outlines a young man who becomes a Texas Ranger. He is the protagonist of the story, yet he doesn't take up the entire story. And I wanted – the reason I put Jefferson in there forefront was because I love the name of the book, actually. My wife titled it, and it's perfect. Mm-hmm. But I wanted the story to be more about the Texas Rangers' creed than about an individual ranger, although he followed the creed to his death. Mm-hmm. But I wanted it to be more about these men, these hard men, these men that followed the trail no matter what. And I had somebody make a comment to me. I think it was in while I was in the hospital. I got a text or an email or something from somebody, and they said, "You know, we really liked Jefferson's Chance, although Jefferson wasn't in it, but half the book." Well, he didn't need to be in it because that's not what the book was about. Do you find yourself writing books where the story is the protagonist more than the protagonist? That was a long way around that question, I have to tell you.
Yeah, I think that my focus on character leads me to actually kind of do the opposite. The development of the character winds up being more important than, in some ways, than the overall story. Although, particularly with my novels, I try to think of something like one or two word summation of what the book is about. Uh-huh. And it'll be something like freedom.
Uh-huh.
Dignity or duty or something
honor.
Like that. And that is the theme, honor, that I'm really trying to hit through that character and the supporting characters. So, yeah, I guess I'm kind of in between on that.
Okay, because that would be the word, if I had to assign a word to Jefferson's Chance, that would be the word, one word that I would use to describe the honor. You and I are not that far off from that. That's nice to know. Bobby, you got anything?
I'm reviewing a little list of questions here.
Oh.
I think this is sort of kind of like a little off the topic, but questions I, as a reader, I guess, are interested in, kind of like, what would you say are the best choices that made you into the writer you are today?
Oh, good question.
The best choices.
Uh-huh.
I would say two things. I would say my choice in reading material earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
The choice in writers that I admired enough that I wanted to be influenced by them. And then my second best choice, I think, is that when I decided that I wanted to get serious about writing, in addition to practicing by writing stuff, I really dove deeply into the craft of writing. And I got all the books I could find, subscribed to Writer's Digest, and, you know, followed all those articles, trying to find ways to improve the craft as I was trying to also develop the skill through practice, which I guess is added to the talent that you bring to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that
mm-hmm.
just that raw talent without being refined, I think, can be kind of spread a little too widely. So I'm really glad that I took the time to do that. In fact, the novel Bound for the Promised Land, that's the thing that I'm proudest of anything I've done. And when I first started writing, I tried to write it, and it sucked. I got a couple of chapters, and I'm like, I'm not good enough to do justice to the story I want to tell here. So I shelved that and wrote some smaller things over the next few years, so as to develop my style and my voice before I tackled that thing that I felt was so important and felt so strongly about. And I think that was a good choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about, for our listeners, I would recommend you go back and listen to our first interview with Troy, which was on January 21st of 2016. And we talk about that book quite a bit. And when I was re-listening to that interview, you also chatted a bit about how you captured the voices of the characters in that book. And you did some research that was so interesting. I think part of it is helping writers figure out where can they go to, you know, besides Google or what all, what other sources are there? And you talked about recollections that had been recorded. I think it was with that book. Do you recall that? I thought, oh, this is a great piece of information.
Oh, that must be the WPA slave narrative.
Yes, yes. Especially now when we're all talking about Black Lives Matter and a lot of people are, you know, tell us, if you could, just remind us about that source.
Oh, that is a wonderful source. That's back during the Depression, you know, when FDR was doing all of his alphabet policies and trying to find different ways to spend government money to put people to work.
Mm-hmm.
The WPA, the Works Progress Administration, hired a bunch of unemployed journalists and teachers throughout the South and the Midwest to go out and find every living ex-slave they could find. And they had a sheet of questions that they asked all of them so that they could get, you know, kind of a database in a way. And so there are, I forget how many volumes, 20 big volumes. All these people would have been at least in their 70s or 80s. And it really, excuse me, is a wonderful, wonderful way to get at the voice of those people who weren't given a voice, right, during slavery. So being able to read through those, and by the way, you can find those. It's online now. When I wrote that 25 years ago, when I started on it, I had to find the actual printed volumes, and it was thousands of pages. But you can find it online. The slave narratives, WPA slave narratives, just Google that. And it's searchable and everything. You can search it by state,
wow,
by your towns or whatever. But it is, it's a wonderful way to get not just the cadence of the speech, but kind of the cadence of the daily life of those people. And there's something similar called the Indian Pioneer Papers out in Oklahoma. They went a little bit further. They didn't just interview the ex-slaves. They interviewed everybody, all the old people they could find.
Interesting.
So you've got a lot of old cowboys in the 1930s who had come, when the area was opened up. And a lot of members of the five tribes, Cherokees and Choctaws, talking about what life was like. And that also is online and searchable. And it is very, very fascinating.
That's fascinating.
When you write, Troy, question we asked our guest last week, and I'm going to roll it over and ask you the same question. When you write, do you write to please your audience? Do you write to please yourself? Or do you write to please your ego?
Primarily, I write to please myself. There are just things that I want to express. And in some cases, no one may read them, although that's where the ego comes in. I hope they do.
Sure.
And I like to know that, I like to know people are reading what I wrote, and I like when it's recognized. I have found that when I try to write just to a broad general audience and what their expectations are, I don't do as well. It sort of falls flat.
Right.
So I write basically the stories I want to read.
I actually would have picked the same answer. I write to please myself, because if I'm happy with the story, some people are going to be happy with the story.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone. Not everyone's always happy with what you write. I mean, that's just, we've talked to writers who just have a snit fit over reviews, haven't we, Bobby?
Oh, we have. And we've had some writers that say, what else would I do? I have to write.
Yeah.
It's like breathing.
I have to write, but they're not, the reviews are horrible. What can I do to get the reviews up? Well, stop worrying about them for one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Read them.
Write your best story.
Yeah.
The thing about being a writer or any other kind of artist is that whether you feel like you've achieved success or not, you can always, on your deathbed, go out with your last breath convinced that you still will in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's like paying your taxes. So you can always say.
You have a prolific imagination, especially since you write different genres. What do you do to, do you need to do some things to feed? How would you suggest, do you have tips on how you would feed your imagination, especially if you're a new writer and maybe you feel not really with writer's block, you're just sort of dry? Do you have some suggestions on how to make that imagination really big?
Yeah, he writes on Facebook.
that's my public historian persona.
I have read some really funny stuff that you posted.
Yes.
So
at this point in my life, I have so much stuff in the queue that I want to write before I die. I've got more than enough to stay busy. But when I was just starting, what I did was, well, you know, there are only a certain limited number of plots that just get told in different ways.
Right.
So I would try to think of just a plot of a story that I like and take that basic plot, not, you know, like not stealing it wholesale, but just the basic idea and putting it in a different context.
Sure.
You know, like how would I tell this story differently, or how would I tell this story that I saw as a science fiction movie as a Western, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just one example I can think of is that one of my early short stories called Casualties. It's about a Pinkerton detective who is trying to rescue this rich guy's kidnapped daughter, but he is haunted by the fact that he messed up on a previous rescue of that child. And that was basically taking what was that movie that Clint Eastwood did where he's in the Secret Service? That basic idea, you failed before, and so that makes you a challenge to succeed now. And so I just put it in totally different circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, think about things that way. Now, a novel I wrote early on, Caleb's Price. Basically, I thought of the just kind of stereotype of the Western story that comes from the great novel Shane. And I asked myself, okay, if you had this basic same setup and the mysterious stranger comes along, what happens if there's some question as to whether he might actually have been sent there by the cattle baron to win over people's affection so he could betray them and kill them all?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the same setup, but it becomes very different.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take one last break. If you don't mind hanging on, don't go anywhere. And Bobby, when we come back, you'll be asking the question. But it's got to be a brief one because we're almost out of time.
I got it. Okay.
You're listening to The Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. And now, how about a brief word from Creative Edge? You know, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. No. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals and needs. So Creative Edge, it's your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson, publicist, www.creative-edge.com. Dot services. And publicist is he. So, Bobby Jean, take it away.
Okay, here's the question. Do you get writer's block, yes or no? And if you do, what do you do about it?
I do. It's as frustrating as heck. And what I do about it is I work at a bunch of different genres and also write nonfiction. So if I get writer's block on one thing, I move over to something else for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's
and
easy
then come
enough.
Back to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That, there's a simple a solution.
Work, especially writing history is very different.
That's yes. Different. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Troy, thanks again for joining us. It's been a hoot having you back.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And I hope, of course, that you'll come back and visit us when you get yet another book out, whether it's a compilation or an anthology or a novel.
All right.
Holler at the bookie. She'll get you booked. And it's Troy D. Smith. And where can our listeners find you, Troy?
Where can they find me in what sense?
Well, in your email. Well, I know that they know you're now you're in Spartan, Tennessee, but email and web address and stuff like that.
I tell you what, I have a website. It's Troy Duane Smith, all one word, .com, DUANE.
Okay.
But also I'm an associate professor of history at Tennessee Tech University. So if you lose track of where I am, you can go to the history department webpage and find my email and my contact information.
There you go.
Anytime.
There you go. And of course you can always find him on Facebook.
That's right.
That's right. Like I said, I've read some hilarious stuff from you on Facebook. So anyway, thanks again, Troy. It's been a hoot having you, and we appreciate you taking the time to be with us this evening. Next week, we have a writer, Ginger Gaffney, who is a superior horsewoman, and she's written a book, I think a couple, but the one that comes to mind is, what is it, Half Broke.
Yeah, Half Broke. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's a story about, just get the book.
Yeah.
It's about the prison system and how they use the prisoners to train the horses and stuff.
Right.
It's a nonfiction. It's really great.
It opens a whole world that most of us really aren't familiar with. Fascinating story.
So she'll be with us next week. And we have, what's his name? Willits. Ed Willits will be on with Russ and I on the 17th. And until then, for everybody here at the Writer's Block, Bobby Jean, myself, Russ Avison, and of course, how can I close the show without giving kudos to Ms. Claire Fullerton?
Yay, Claire!
We love you, Claire. And we are out of here.